As sports history fans, we often reminisce about the legends. Willis Reed limping on to the NBA Finals court, Curt Schilling's bloody sock, Kerry Strug's courageous dismount, and so many more. These moments often define sports history. But what about the countless injuries that did not become legends, or careers that were derailed due to inadequate care? That's where this episode's sponsor comes in. Introducing to you, ILP Sports Consultants, your trusted sports injury partner, available 24/7. Brian Maielli at ILP Sports Consultants has over 20 years of experience in the orthopedic and sports medicine industry, and he has worked with athletes across the gamut, from youth to amateurs, professionals, in almost every sport played in the United States of America, accommodating athletes at every stage of their career. This adaptability ensures that ILP services are perfectly tailored to your skill level, no matter where you are in your athletic journey. With ILP, you are in control. Choose the steps that matter most to you: diagnosis, treatment plan, recovery, or the whole journey. ILP services are tailored to your unique needs. Rushing for care is a common pitfall, leading to future problems. ILP Sports Consultants helps you make the right decisions, ensuring that you receive timely and safe care. And here's a bonus. Brian hosts the Injured List podcast, sharing insights and athlete stories you won't want to miss. Whether you're a concerned parent or grandparent, or an athlete yourself seeking guidance, ILP Sports Consultants is your beacon of hope in sports injury management. Visit ilpsports.com today. That's the letters ilpsports.com. ILP Sports Consultants, where your well-being is the priority and your recovery is the mission. Choose ILP Sports Consultants for a healthier sports journey, helping you get back in the game the smart way.
Legendary NFL coach Don Shula, per the Pro Football Hall of Fame at his induction ceremony, said the important thing is not what Don Shula knows or what any of my assistant coaches know. The important thing is that we can transmit to the people we're responsible for. That's what coaching is, the ability to transfer information. And we'll transmit some information to you all for the football history headlines for January 4th. It's all coming up in just a moment. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pig Pen in Western Pennsylvania, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So, with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines. Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome to the football history headlines for January 4th. Yes, we are starting our first full week of the new year in January, and the holidays are behind us. But the football season is just beginning as the playoffs are starting to heat up. So we're going to talk about some history, and we'll go all the way back to 1883 on January 4th, and the Ontario Rugby Football Union formed. You might ask, hey, isn't this a place for football history? Where are we talking about the Ontario Rugby Football Union? Well, my friends, yes, it is a football history, and this rugby club from Ontario is the forerunner of the Canadian Football League. Yes, the CFL. January 4th, 1942, the Polo Grounds in New York City. At the fourth NFL All-Star Game in a series where the NFL champs would play against the best players of the rest of the league, the Bears faced a group led by Slingin' Sammy Baugh and Frank Filchuk of Washington and Green Bay's Dodd Hudson. This game occurred less than a month after the attack on Pearl Harbor and was a distraction for the fans who were focused on the war effort. The Chicago Bears showed why they were so good as they defeated the NFL All-Stars 35-24 in a game filled with fights on the field and the fights of snowballs in the stands by the fans. Now let's time warp into the Super Bowl era. January 4th, 1970, Alameda County Coliseum in Oakland, California, the Kansas City Chiefs met their rivals, the Oakland Raiders, in the 1969 AFL Championship game. The Chiefs' defense came to play and made it tough sledding for the Raiders all game as they forced four interceptions of Oakland passes. KC earned the right to advance into the big game with a 17-7 victory over the home team. On the other side of the league, January 4, 1970, Metropolitan Stadium in Bloomington, Minnesota. Meanwhile, the NFL Championship game seemed to see who would win to face the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. It was the Minnesota Vikings who outlasted the Cleveland Browns 27-7 in that game. January 4th, 1976, at Three Rivers Stadium in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the AFC Championship game of the 1970s had two pretty common teams playing in it. Can you believe that there was only one game for the Lamar Hunt Trophy in the decade of the 1970s where neither the Steelers nor the Raiders were a participant? Well, in the conference title game of the 1975 season, it was one of the three times in the decade that the Steelers and the Raiders squared off against each other. This time around, it was the Steelers who outlasted the Raiders 16-10. The ProFootballReference.com website gives us the data that Franco Harris and John Stallworth scored to help the Steel City advance into the Super Bowl. January 4th, 1986, Anaheim, California. The Los Angeles Rams running back Eric Dickerson scored twice as he pounded a turf for an NFL postseason record of 248 yards in a 20-0 Rams win over the Dallas Cowboys in NFC divisional playoffs. January 4th, 1999, the first BCS National Championship game of the Bowl Championship Series era was played at Sun Devil Stadium in Tempe, Arizona in the 28th Fiesta Bowl as number 1 Tennessee defeated number 2 Florida State 23-16 in the game. January 4th, 2000, a day after accepting the head coaching position with the New York Jets franchise, Bill Belichick resigns the Jets position and later accepts the New England Patriots head job. That same day, January 4th, 2000, Louisiana Superdome in New Orleans. The second BCS National Championship game was held under the guise of the All-State Sugar Bowl. It matched up two pretty good offensive teams against each other. Number 1 Florida State would face number 2 Virginia Tech squad. The Seminoles had their great wide receiver, Peter Warwick, and company, while the Hokies placed an interesting redshirt freshman under center named Michael Vick per the AllStateSugarBowl.org site. There was plenty of offensive fireworks as advertised. Warwick helped the Seminoles jump out early to a 28-7 lead in the first half, but Vick spearheaded the Hokies to a great comeback and actually put Virginia Tech ahead 29-28 at the end of the third quarter. Then Warwick and Florida State gave the final push that handed the game to Florida State as FSU outlasted VT 46-29 in an exciting game. Now let's take a quick break from our headlines and let me remind you, you can learn more about gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com. And you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone who's here, is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message just for you.
This is Jeremy McFarland from the Footballist Family Podcast. And I'm going to encourage you, if you get a chance, to come over to the Footballist Family Podcast, where we look at what makes football special and family to each person. We talk about each team and we talk about the stories behind why fans love those teams. We encourage you to come and join us in our discussion. Thank you.
All right, now that we got the memory neurons in your brain excited, let's go to January 4th, 2004 at the Louisiana Superdome in New Orleans. The sixth BCS National Championship game once again took place at the Sugar Bowl as the top two teams in the rankings met once again. The second-ranked LSU Tigers were the opponents for the number 1 Oklahoma Sooners per the AllStateSugarBowl.org website. Even the coaches in this game were interesting, as the schemes of OU's Bob Stoops would face the strategies of Nick Saban of LSU. The Sooners went into the game as a 6-point favorite. Yes, Oklahoma's offense, which was tops in the land, averaged an astounding 45.2 points during the regular season coming into the game, and the Sooners were the nation's third-best overall defensive team, giving up an average of a mere 255.7 yards per game. The Tigers fielded two All-American selections in the contest, but Oklahoma looked like an all-star team when they rolled out seven young men that received All-America honors, including Heisman winner Jason White. On paper, no wonder the Sooners were favored, but there was a reason they still play the games. LSU came and played as a complete cohesive unit in the ultimate team sport. The Tigers' defense stifled White and the Sooners' offense most of the evening, limiting them to 152 yards and two TDs all evening long. Saban's offense responded when it needed to most, including right after the Sooners scored when they had a great field position after a blocked punt. It was LSU in a 21-14 upset of Oklahoma in the 70th Sugar Bowl for the national title. And speaking about Oklahoma, the very next year, January 4th, 2005, at Plural Player Stadium in Miami Gardens in Florida, the Sooners would be back as a participant in the 7th BCS National Championship in the Orange Bowl this year. This time, Bob Stoops and company would enter as a second-ranked team in the country and would play against a Pete Carroll-coached number one Southern Cal team. The Orange Bowl site promotes the game as the Battle of Award Winners, as 2004 Heisman Trophy winner Matt Leinhart faced off against the 2003 Heisman winner Jason White. This posting goes on to say that the Orange Bowl hosted its 18th national championship and six which have included Oklahoma in the game. The contest wasn't even close, as the Trojans jumped out to a 28-8 lead at the half and never looked back as they triumphed 55-19 to win the BCS title. Leinart threw five touchdown passes in the game. But that's not the end of the story. A few years after the game was played, in June of 2010, the BCS, according to the ConquestChronicles.com website, under the guidance of NCAA findings of USC's lack of institutional control, stripped the title from the Trojans. The investigation of football's governing board found that running back Reggie Bush was ineligible for the violation of NCAA rules, which in essence disqualified Southern Cal in games that Bush played in. Bush also had to vacate his 2005 Heisman Trophy. The BCS said in a statement the 2004 national title will remain vacant. One team besides the Sooners that were upset about this matter was the Auburn Tigers, who with a perfect 13-0 season in the rugged SEC conference were not chosen to play in the big game for the title. January 4th was a popular day for the national title game because on January 4th, 2006, the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California, there may have been another national title stripped too because of the NCAA findings of the Trojans that we just talked about a few minutes ago. But USC fell in the 8th BCS National Championship to Vince Young and the number 2 Texas team, who defeated number 1 Southern Cal 41-38 at the 92nd Rose Bowl. Texas won the national championship, but boy, was it a classic battle. In fact, some folks, such as SBNation.com, call it the greatest national championship game ever, and they might be right. This game had all the drama, the star power, and the great coaching, and made it even an instant classic. Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, and the aforementioned Vince Young highlighted a couple of the legendary college rosters for the contest. The game was also significant as it was the last one called by broadcaster Keith Jackson, who is probably the greatest college football play-by-play man of all time. Young became a collegiate legend in the big stage as he went 30 of 40 passing for 267 yards, plus 19 runs of 200 yards and three scores. He really took the Longhorns and put them on his shoulders to propel them back into the game after a 38-26 deficit with 6:42 to play. Then one of the greatest plays occurred. With a mere 26 seconds left on the clock and down by 5, Texas faced with a 4th and 5 from the USC 8-yard line, Young took the shotgun snap and dropped back to pass. All of a sudden, he saw daylight and dashed around the right end to trot into the end zone for the go-ahead winning score. The Texas Longhorns of coach Mack Brown would become the national champions. We're going to stay in the college realm, but this one wasn't for a national title, but it's very significant. January 4th, 2010, at the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl, Boise State was facing Texas Christian University in the first BCS bowl game played between two non-BCS teams, as well as it was the first BCS bowl game when both teams were undefeated heading into the game. The Broncos squad was led by quarterback Cullen Moore and running back Doug Martin, while the Horned Frogs had Andy Dalton under center, per ESPN.com. Boise State won the game when Doug Martin got a 2-yard touchdown with 7:21 left in the fourth quarter to make it a 17-10 victory. With all this exciting action on the field, it's time to have a party. And why not make it a birthday party for this January 4th for our Hall of Famers that have birthdays on this day? And we'll start off in the year 1925 in Connellsville, Pennsylvania. Notre Dame's legendary quarterback, Johnny Lujack, was born. The National Football Foundation has a great bio on Johnny L. John Lujack was the Heisman Trophy winner's Angelo Bertelli's replacement at quarterback when the signal caller was called off to fight in the U.S. military during World War II. Johnny led the Notre Dame to important victories over Army 26-0 and Iowa pre-flight 14-13 to secure the 1943 national championship for the Irish. After serving in the war effort overseas himself, Lujack returned under center for the Irish in 1946 and 1947. Notre Dame went 17-0-1 in that period and won two national championships. Lujack was a unanimous All-American both seasons, and he won the Heisman himself in 1947. Johnny was an excellent defender as well, as he demonstrated in 1946 when he tackled Doc Blanchard, cutting off a sure Army touchdown in a game that ended 0-0. The National Football Foundation voters selected Johnny Lujack for induction into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1960. Johnny's gridiron glory did not stop after college, though. Lujack played for the Chicago Bears and George Halas from 1948 to 1951. The pinnacle of his pro career came in 1948 against the Chicago Cardinals as he tossed six touchdown passes for the Bears. And just like we alluded to earlier, we go to Grand River, Ohio in 1930 on January 4th, and the winningest coach in NFL history, Don Shula, was born. According to his bio on the ProFootballHOF.com website, Shula served 33 seasons as a head coach for NFL teams. His coaching career started off in Baltimore with the Colts, where he led the Blue Horseshoe to seven straight winning seasons, including a trip to Super Bowl III against the Joe Namath-led New York Jets. Before the 1970 season, the great coach moved to take over the reins of the Miami Dolphins. There, he continued to win and even guided the team to consecutive Super Bowl victories in Super Bowl VII and Super Bowl VIII editions of the game. All in all, he coached six teams in the game to try to win the Lombardi Trophy in his 33 years of coaching. The pinnacle of his career was the 1972 Dolphins, who went a perfect 17-0 and were crowned as champs. And so far, they're the only teams since the merger to accomplish this feat. At the 1990 enshrinement ceremonies in Canton, Don Shula was welcomed into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We hope you enjoyed these football history headlines and legendary Hall of Fame birthdays. And don't worry, we'll be back tomorrow for the January 5th edition of both these great series on the PigskinDispatch.com podcast. But you can also get some great action on SportsHistoryNetwork.com. As a matter of fact, there's a great book giveaway. It's Amos Alonzo Stagg, College Football's Man in Motion by Jennifer Taylor Hall. A signed copy of that will be given to a winner on the SportsHistoryNetwork.com. So make sure you go there right away and sign up for this great book giveaway, and check out some of those other great podcasts we have besides Pigskin Dispatch. There's the Football History Dude with Arnie Chapman and a bunch of other great football oriented, and actually there's many other podcasts that are just based on other sports in history, and some great personalities and guests on all these shows too. So make sure you check those out and try to win that great book. That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Each week, the official Football Learning Academy podcast will take you deep into the history of pro football through interviews with players, coaches, or administrators in the NFL, as well as interviews with Pro Football Hall of Fame selectors, authors, and historians. You'll learn how the game evolved and important moments that shaped the sport into what it is today. And don't miss the Pro Football History Nugget of the Week. Listen to the official Football Learning Academy podcast on the Sports History Network.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.